Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Francine Foss. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and he's an internationally recognized expert on colorectal cancer. Dr. Foss is a professor of medical oncology and dermatology, and she's an expert in the treatment of lymphomas. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Ed Chu welcomes Dr. Miguel Maturin. Dr. Maturin is an assistant professor of ophthalmology at Yale School of Medicine.
Now, Dr. Maturin's specialty, in addition to the general field of ophthalmology, is focusing on eye cancers that specifically involve the eye. And I would guess many of our listeners probably aren't aware that the eye is an area of the body where cancer can develop. So maybe, Miguel, we can start off by just telling our listeners how common is the eye involved in terms of cancer?
Well, first of all, I would like to emphasize that eye cancer is a rare condition. It's not very common. However, it can affect patients at any age, and it can affect male or females equally.
And what type of eye cancers are there?
Well, if we need to make a big division, we can divide the eye tumors between primary tumors from the eye, which means that the tumor originates in the eye, or they can be tumors coming from other sides of the body.
Mm-hmm. So I think for the purposes of our discussion this evening, we'll be focusing on the primary eye cancers, but maybe just briefly you can just mention a little bit about, so what type of cancers can spread to the eye that one would need to, you know, be aware of?
Well, the most common cancers that can affect or can give metastasis to the eye are breast, lung, sometimes unknown, and or skin cancers too, skin melanoma. Mm-hmm. But I think that any cancer can spread into the eye.
Hmm. Okay, interesting. So let's focus on the primary eye cancers, and what would be the most common primary eye cancers that you would see?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that 50% of the time that patients are referred with the possibility of an eye cancer, they don't have an eye cancer. After that, well, the most common intraocular cancer in adults is melanoma. The most common intraocular cancer in children is called retinoblastoma.
Hmm. Okay. And are there any type of, say, chronic eye conditions that are associated with or can develop into an eye cancer?
Like, let's use the example of the nevus on the skin. Mm-hmm. They need to be checked by the dermatologist sometimes for life, most of the time for life. Well, 6% of the white population can have a nevus in the back of the eye, and only 6 per million can develop a melanoma.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned white Caucasians. How about, say, African Americans?
It's very we've seen melanomas in African Americans, in Hispanics, or in even in Asians, but it's not as common as Caucasians with blue eyes.
Now, what would be the typical symptoms that an individual would present with?
Well, this is the hard part, and I want to be very clear with everybody who is listening to this conversation. Sometimes there are no symptoms. Sometimes the tumors can be found during a routine eye examination, or they can give any common ophthalmic symptoms. Now, what I want to be clear is that most of the time, these symptoms are not due to a cancer.
Hmm. So again, yeah, you had mentioned that a large majority of the patients who would be referred to you don't have an eye cancer. So then what would be the reason for them being referred to you?
Well, most of the patients, they will go, if they have a symptom, they will go to their local doctor, to the general ophthalmologist. The general ophthalmologist will find the tumor, and then they will refer the patient to the specialist in eye tumors.
Okay. So let's maybe focus a little bit on ocular melanoma, which you say is the most common eye cancer in adults. So when would it typically occur in, say, the adult population?
Well, usually it occurs in around 50 years of age. We've seen that in young kids, and we've seen that in older people too. Mm-hmm. But the average is around 50s.
Now, we typically think of melanoma as occurring on the skin. So is there a relationship between the melanoma in the eye, ocular melanoma, and the skin melanoma?
Well, that's a very important question, because even they have the same name, they do not behave the same. And yes, 80% of the time, the melanoma occurs on the skin, and maybe 15% of the time, they can occur in the eye. And most of the time, they are intraocular, but they can affect any part of the eye.
And the risk for developing ocular melanoma, is it the same as the risk for developing skin melanoma?
No, because to my knowledge, there is a good relationship between the sun exposure and skin melanoma or any skin cancer. And it's not been proven that that's the same risk for ocular melanoma.
Hmm. Okay. So do we know what causes ocular melanoma?
We don't know. We don't know. Are certain rare conditions that they can, you know, put the patient at risk of having a melanoma, but they're rare. They're not common.
And are there moles or nevus or, you know, discolorations within the eye that could predispose?
There is a condition called melanocytosis, and that's when patients, they have skin areas on the surface of the eye or in the back of the eye, they have a higher risk to develop melanomas, but in general, not other conditions, no.
And we know for skin melanoma that there is a genetic component. So obviously, if a family member develops skin melanoma, then another relative is at higher risk, potentially. What do we know about the genetics of ocular melanoma?
Well, that's another important question. There are a lot of studies that they're under process these days to know if there is any genetic relationship. Now, what I want to emphasize is that the thing that a father or a mother has a melanoma does not mean that their offspring will have a melanoma. No. What is being studied is that there are some gene mutations, gene alteration within the tumor that they can be, and they looks like they are a very important prognostic factor for the future of that patient.
Hmm. Okay. And so again, the typical symptoms that an individual who has ocular melanoma, how would they present?
There are no typical symptoms. So I can mention, again, no symptoms, blurry vision, floaters, flashes, but there are very common symptoms in mm-hmm. ophthalmology.
Right, right. Unfortunately, I see some of those floaters every day. So hopefully I don't have ocular melanoma.
I know you don't.
But if someone were to have, you know, change in their vision or blurriness of vision or floaters that just seem unusual in character, what should an individual then do?
Go to their ophthalmologist mm-hmm. and see the ophthalmologist, have a complete eye examination with dilation of the pupils, and in a routine eye examination, if there is a tumor, they can be found.
And so the ophthalmologist sees something suspicious, then would that ophthalmologist then try to make the diagnosis, or would that individual then be referred to you, who really specializes in these types of eye cancers?
Well, it depends on the referring doctor, but my guess is that most of the doctors, they will be referring the the patients to a center who specializes in eye tumors, yes.
And then what would you do, Miguel, in that situation?
Well, in general, we will repeat the complete eye exam, and depending on what the patient has, then we'll use different diagnostic methods to find, you know, to make the correct diagnosis. Most of the time, the correct diagnosis is made during the clinic, so in general, does not need any invasive test to make the diagnosis. Hmm. However, sometimes there are it's not that easy, and then yes, we will need to do a biopsy, but those are the minority of the cases.
Well, that's interesting, because I guess I would have assumed that in all cases you need to do a biopsy to make the diagnosis.
No, we don't.
So, on a simplistic level, what are these diagnostic tests that you would perform?
Well, we will see the patient with, it's a complete eye exam, including evaluation of the vision, intraocular pressure, an examination with a slit lamp, examination, the fundus examination, ultrasound, dye test, which it's called retinofluorescein angiography, with an injection in the vein in the arm, and we take fundus photos of that. We use a test called optical coherence tomography, which is it's a simple test. It takes a few minutes to do it. There are many different possibilities, but most of the time, yes, it's. We can make the diagnosis the day we see the patient.
Now, if an individual is given the diagnosis of ocular melanoma, do you have to worry that perhaps there's spread of that melanoma to other parts of the body, or is it just confined to the eye?
No, we are always concerned about that. And it depends on location of the tumor, size of the tumor in both diameter and thickness, other feature of the tumors that will tell, and the genetic analysis that will tell us, you know, how aggressive the tumor is. Yes, with melanoma, we are always concerned about spreading, and that's why any patient, this is not Dr. Mathering treating a patient, it's a whole team mm-hmm. of doctors, ocular oncologists, medical oncologists, cytogenetics, the pathologist. We are all involved in the care of these patients. Hmm.
Terrific. And also, I guess, is there any general recommendations as to, you know, whether or not, you know, children, adults should, you know, when they go out in the sun, they should wear, you know, sunglasses to try to prevent sun exposure to the eyes, just like we talk about using, you know, sunscreen and sunblock to prevent the damaging effects of the sun on the skin?
Well, to my knowledge, there is no proof of that for eye cancer. So any answer that I can give you to that will be a personal, but not scientific.
Uh-huh. Okay. Great. Well, so you've been listening to Yale Cancer Center Answers, and I'm here in the studio this evening discussing eye cancer with our special guest expert, Dr. Miguel Maturin from the Yale Cancer Center and the Yale School of Medicine.
It's estimated that over 2 million men in the U.S. are currently living with prostate cancer. 1 in 6 American men will develop prostate cancer in the course of his lifetime. Major advances in the detection and treatment of prostate cancer have dramatically decreased the number of men who die from this disease. Screening for prostate cancer can be performed quickly and easily in a physician's office using 2 simple tests, a physical exam and a blood test. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, like the one at Yale, to test innovative new treatments for prostate cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to experimental medicines not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
Welcome back to Yale Cancer Center Answers. This is Dr. Ed Chu, and I'm here joined by Dr. Miguel Maturin, Assistant Professor of Ophthalmology at the Yale School of Medicine. And before the break, we were talking about ocular melanoma, which is the most common form of eye cancer in adults. Miguel, maybe we can talk a little bit about, once ocular melanoma is diagnosed, what are the different types of treatments that you would consider?
Well, It depends on several factors. I will try to make a good summary of the options of treatment. One option is to, and it's maybe the most common option in the world, is the radiotherapy. The radiotherapy can be applied in two different forms. One is with what is called a plaque radiotherapy or brachytherapy, and that consists on application or the suture of a small device that has the size of a penny on the surface of the eye, wherever the tumor is located. The plaque will stay in place for 4 or 5 days, depending on the size of the tumor and the amount of radiation required. And then on a second surgery, the plaque is removed. A few months later, most of the time, a laser called transpupillary thermotherapy will be done in the office. And that is done between 2 and 4 times. That is for local radiotherapy. The other option to develop radiotherapy to the eye is an external radiotherapy, and that is done by the radiation oncologist. Another option, and unfortunately that we have to do, and it's an important option, is to remove the eye.
And what would make you want to consider, say, removal of the eye as opposed to radiation therapy?
Well, if the tumor is very large, for example, filling 50% of the eye, or if there is no chance for vision in the future, then we will advise removing the eye. But the important thing in here is that ophthalmology is the field to take care of vision. In ocular oncology, we have different priorities. The life is number one, the eye is number two, and vision is the third one.
Now, with radiation therapy, is there a possibility that vision can be maintained or restored?
It's expected that depending on different factors, location of the tumor, size of the tumor, but in average, we expect that 50% of patients, they will have some damage in their vision.
Okay. And obviously, if the patient needs to have their eye removed, then that's complete loss of vision. But is there anything that can be done afterwards in terms of, kind of cosmetic?
Yes, the patient will be referred to an ocularist who is an artist who will make the artificial eye, the plastic eye, trying to look as much as possible as the opposite eye. And these days, they have very good cosmetics.
And actually, for surgery, can this be done as an outpatient procedure, or do patients need to be admitted as an inpatient?
Well, regarding removing of the eye, it can be done as an outpatient procedure.
Wow.
Regarding the plaques, well, that depends on the state regulation. Some states, they require the patients with the radioactive device to be in the hospital, in the room, and some states, they allow the patients to go home or to a hotel where they can be in the room for 4 or 5 days.
Now, what would be the general follow-up process once, say, for instance, either radiation therapy has been done or removal of the eye?
Well, since we are talking about melanoma, melanoma of the eye is a very strange condition. And my advice today will be that these patients, they need to be follow up for life.
And how frequently would you, as the ocular ophthalmologist, generally, be seeing these patients and follow up?
Well, we like to work with the referring doctors. So let's see that the patient is being treated, and the patient then all the immediately the early follow-ups are taken care of. Then the patient needs to be seen twice a year, I may say.
Mm-hmm. And we talked about, obviously, the potential risk of ocular melanoma and skin melanoma, but I'm just curious, since the eye is kind of right there in the brain, is there ever an increased risk for those patients to develop, say, metastasis to the brain?
Patients with intraocular melanoma, when they develop metastasis, 90% of the time, the first metastasis is in the liver, not in the brain. Mm-hmm. The second place is are the lungs, and the third place, the skin.
So it's curious, because one wouldn't really think about, right, some kind of connection between the eye and the liver. So is it known why, as you say, 90% of the patients may present with metastatic involvement of the
well,
liver?
Well, when that happens, I mean, the spreading is through the blood. Mm-hmm. And it will go, you know, wherever they can, the tumors can develop easy. And the reason why the liver is more common, I'm not sure about that. Why is the reason? But it spreads through the bloodstream.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, so we've talked about ocular melanoma. Maybe we can talk just real briefly about the most common form of eye cancer in kids, which, as you say, is retinoblastoma. So, what age group do we need to worry about in the kiddie population?
Well, the most common age is the first 2 years of life. However, we've seen in older kids. It's mm-hmm. uncommon, but we've seen. It's important to, and we can talk days about retinoblastoma, but I will try to make things very simple for the audience. There are two different types of retinoblastoma, and everything is based on the mutation that is in these patients. One type of mutation is called somatic mutation, and that means that the gene is wrong only in the retina. The other type of mutation is called germline mutation, and that means that the mutation occurs very, very early, and it can affect any cell of the body of those kids. This is important because patients with the somatic mutation, the one that is only in the eye, they do well. And patients who have the germline mutation, they are at higher risk for other problems. Mm-hmm. But if you give me one more second, mm-hmm. I want to say that 100 years ago, all these kids died. These days, more than 95% of these kids in first world countries, they survive.
And what has made such that big difference in that 100-year period?
Well, the improvement in diagnosis and treatment. Sometimes, yes, we need to remove the eye in these kids, but we are saving the kid's life. Mm-hmm. And they can have a very normal life seeing with one eye. Mm-hmm. They just need to wear protective glasses, but they can play sports. They can have a normal life. The other options of treatment are chemotherapy, radiation, laser, cryotherapy, and each patient, each eye, each tumor will be treated accordingly of its need. So it's and we are dealing with, you know, with families who, with all the reasons, they, you know, they have reasons to be concerned and to be anxious, but it's a teamwork, and again, it involves the family, pediatric oncologist, radiation oncologist, and us.
Now, as you mentioned, there is a germline mutation in the
yes.
retinoblastoma gene, so in theory, that diagnosis could be made kind of during the prenatal stage, no? Or
yes, I mean, and there is a debate about that too. But Yes, the blood can be studied, and there are good ultrasounds that can make diagnosis early in life, and everybody will be ready. But most of the time, I mean, if the father or the mother, one of them have a retinoblastoma, the kid should be seen early mm-hmm. in life. Could be first week, first month. Yes, the parents usually they know they need to go to the eye doctor.
Okay, maybe Miguel, maybe you could tell our listeners if in fact there's a concern about eye cancer or some eye condition associated with their treatment. How can they get in touch with you? How can they see you in your clinic?
Well, I work at the Yale Eye Center, which is located on Temple Street in New Haven, and there is a website where they can, looking for the Department of Ophthalmology. There is a section for ocular oncology, and also for, I think it will be in the near future at the Yale Cancer Center, will be part of the website too.
Now, in addition to seeing patients with eye cancer, I know we've talked in the past about you also being more actively involved in seeing our cancer patients who are getting various treatments develop various eye disorders. Maybe you can just tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, that's the second part of ocular oncology. Patients with systemic cancers who can spread to the eye, or they can have side effects from the treatment, either radiotherapy or chemotherapy. Yes, they can have ocular side effects, and we will like to take care of them too.
And one of the common side effects that I see in treating patients with colorectal cancer is patients will actually develop very dry eyes or conjunctivitis of the eyes. And what are your general recommendations in that setting?
Well, we will be working again as a team. Everything in ocular oncology is a team, and the cornea specialist will be involved if the orbit is involved. And I need to mention Dr. Bernardino is part of the ocular oncology team. He takes care of the orbit and eyelid, and I can mention the entire team. If we see a patient with retinoblastoma, we'll be working, for example, with Dr. Salcho, who is the pediatric ophthalmologist at the eye center. If the patient has glaucoma, we'll be working again with Dr. Tsai, Dr. Mayer, Dr. Shields, and I can continue with all the names. Yes, the entire group will be involved.
Well, again, as you say, just as we deal with our disease-specific cancers, with eye cancers, it really is a multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary team that's involved.
Yes, absolutely.
Which I think obviously is critically important in trying to optimize the care of these patients.
Yes, absolutely. We totally agree with that, and we spoke about this a lot.
Yes.
So we're ready to go.
Great. So again, just real quick, so the location of your clinic?
It's 40 Temple Street. It's on the third floor,
right,
in New Haven.
At the Yale Eye Center.
At the Yale Eye Center, yes.
Great. Well, you've been listening to Yale Cancer Center Answers, and I'd like to thank our guest expert this evening, Dr. Miguel Maturin, for joining us.
Thank you.
Until next week, I'm Ed Chu from the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
If you have questions or would like to share your comments, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and find written transcripts of past programs. I'm Bruce Barber, and you're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.